Little roller up along first. Behind the bag. It gets through Buckner. Here comes Knight, and the Mets win it.
A 2-1 pitch. And a drive in the air to deep right field. That ball headed toward the wall. That ball is out of here. Out of here. A game-winning grand slam home run off the bat of Robin Ventura.
Hey. And it's hit deep to left center. Andrew Jones on the run. This one has a chance. Home run. Mike Piazza. And the Mets lead 3-2.
Turner drives one to center, chasing Nimmo back to the warning track right at the fence. He made the catch! Oh, wow! The catch of the year for Brandon Nimmo! He took a home run away from Justin Turner!
Wow.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? The show starts in 10, 9,
Episode 32 of the Say Hello Podcast. Welcome all. My name is Casey Lynn. I'm joined by my co-host, former Met, former Major League pitcher, Bill Pulsifer. We have Stephen White, our producer, doing a great job, as always, behind the glass. Of course, this episode of the Say Hello Podcast is brought to you by roots-recordings.com. Please hit that subscribe button if you are watching us on YouTube at Say Hello Media. Follow us wherever you get your podcasts. And before we start talking about a little Mets baseball, Mr. Pulsifer, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing good, man. Things are great. They, you know, had a great weekend this past weekend. The team's playing well, enjoying the baseball season. What a difference a couple weeks makes. I'm doing well.
Yeah, that's why they call it a marathon in baseball, not a sprint. And before we get into the Mets and how they've turned their season around thus far, episode 32, we know we got to go through a couple Met uniform numbers of past players or current that have worn number 32. Anyone pop up in your mind that you know of?
Well, obviously Steven Matz most recently in my memory. So, yeah. But I worked last night overnight, so I didn't get a chance to do any research, and I feel like I'm cheating if I'm doing research anyway. So I'm just going to stick with Matz, and I know you're going to fill everybody in.
Yeah, you would be correct. He wore number 32, Steven Matz, the Long Islander, not far from where the Mets play. 2015 to 2020. So he had a long tenure.
Ward Melville High School alum.
Yeah, didn't Marcus Stroman actually went there as well?
No, Marcus was Pat Metz.
Okay, all right.
But Medford.
Right.
Ben Brown, who just made his big league debut this year and made his first start last week, he's with the Cubs. He is a Ward Melville player as well.
Yeah, I heard him get called up. So I got a lot of Long Islanders here in the big leagues, and Matt's with the Cardinals right now. Stroman, obviously, with the Yankees. And I would say Matt's the longest tenured, but John Matlack actually wore number 32.
Yeah.
From 1971 to 77. So he'll take the cake on the longest tenured Met. Paul Wilson wore number 32. I was expecting you to get that.
You know, like I said, I worked last night, just woke up not too long ago, and it's my mind hasn't quite locked in yet. But that's embarrassing for me not to say Willie.
Bill making excuses for lack of sleep, just writing that down. Okay. It was only 1 year, 94, but he did wear number 32. Mike Hampton only won it 1 year, but that was a very memorable year, 2000, when the Mets won the National League and went to the World Series. After that, we don't talk about the year 2000. And after that, everyone's favorite player, the most recent, Daniel Vogelbach, wore number 32. He is on the Blue Jays as we speak. He wore it in 2022 and 23. So there's your uniform numbers for our episode number 32. Now, to a whole different, bigger number. Doc Gooden had his number retired. One of what is it, 9, I believe, if you count the players or all of them that are up in the rafters.
I believe it might be everybody on the rafters.
Yeah, including, you know, Shea and even
Bob Murphy.
Bob Murphy, exactly. So, or Ralph Kiner, I believe. Kiner. Yeah. And you had the opportunity. We had Doc on as our first guest. He was absolutely great. You had the opportunity of attending the ceremony, and it is, and Doc's your favorite player. Doc was great on the interview with, or on the podcast with us. And I just thought it funny before I asked you how the day went and how your experience was, that he told a story about how he always wanted to come back to the Mets. And I'm thinking, as I'm watching it on my couch, I've already heard this story because he told the entire story to us and hopefully everybody who had listened. If you're listening now, I don't know what number the episode was, but you just have to scroll down wherever you get your podcasts, and Doc Gooden will be right there. Listen to the podcast. He told a story like he did at Citi Field about how he wanted to come back to the Mets, and he had a great, great stories that were untold, and he was great. So without further ado, Bill, on Sunday, you attended the ceremony. Tell us all about it. It must have been a blast.
Well, I tell you, I had an incredible weekend. It started with going to the game, actually, on Saturday with a friend of mine to celebrate his 50th birthday and kind of the lead up to Sunday. And that was obviously the Doc bobblehead day.
Yep.
So with the right arm action, you know, the action, the arm moves as well.
Yeah, he's
throwing. Yeah. So I was able to get the Doc bobblehead. I'm not a huge bobblehead guy, but to have a piece of memorabilia like that is obviously very cool. I was very lucky and very blessed to be able to actually attend a tribute dinner at Hill Country Barbecue on Saturday night with a bunch of all the guys, sans a few, because there were some guys who weren't at dinner, that were out on the field, with, you know, Tuffle and, Orozco and, mm-hmm. you know, the Barry Lions. I got to go to that dinner. What a special event, for me to be invited to come and be a part of that.
Absolutely.
It blew my mind. And then the day itself, I know a lot of people are like, oh, it's a shame it rained and all that. And it rained on his speech. I thought it was, the whole day was just, to me, so freaking perfect because I think it was kind of like a representation for Doc, where obviously all the hope and the greatness of is going to be, his number's finally going to be retired. And then it starts to rain. And I think I didn't think about it at the time because I was thinking, oh, man, it stinks. It's raining. But right. Then you're thinking, as the sun came out and Buto was out there striking a bunch of people out and the team was playing well and the sun comes out and it turns into a beautiful day. And all in all, the Mets win the game. I felt like it was such a great representation of kind of the darkness into the light and redemption and coming home. And it was just such a perfect, perfect day. And one thing that also really made it perfect as well was seeing Daryl Strawberry there, Straw being there on the field.
Yeah.
And the little interaction that SNY showed between them inside the stadium, just, you know, it warms your heart, brings a tear to the eye. I definitely was welling up in the stands as rain came down my glasses because I was wearing glasses, and just a phenomenal, phenomenal thing. Well past due for it to happen, but I feel like, and Doc even said it in his speech, you know, everything's kind of timing and the timing was right. And maybe this time was now, and it couldn't have been more perfect, man. And for all the people that were there, I feel bad for the people that got out of their seats and ran up when it started raining. Cause I stood right there in the rain and soaked it all in and just loved every single moment of it.
Yeah. I thought it was like you were saying how Buto was out there with the 6 innings and, I think the Mets pitching staff on that Sunday had a total of 14 strikeouts.
That was the number that I was hoping for when Buto started. I'm like, wouldn't it be something if he struck out like 14 guys today? Obviously, right. He didn't get them all, but that was right. Something else, man.
But I mean,
I'm sure he had to have felt that,
uh-huh.
that energy. You know, he knows, and I know he's a younger guy, but I think Doc is enough of a legend, especially as a New York Met, and not just in baseball alone, that he knew what was up, and he was definitely pumped up to go out there and try to represent his and do his, like I tweeted it. He's out there doing his best Doc Gooden impersonation, and it was something to see. And I know it always comes back to fantasy camp a little bit, but I kind of bebopped all over the stadium during the day because there were so many Mets fantasy camp guys there, and was up in one of the suites at one point in time, was sitting in the 100 section at one point in time, was sitting over here on the third base side. It was a heck of a day. And it's all it's really made me do is I can't wait to try to make sure that I'm there for Straws Day in June.
Yeah. And, you know, just with the sun coming out and then Budo, like I was saying, striking out, you know, as many as he did, and the staff had 14, perfect homage to Dr. K.
100%.
You
know?
They had the K, signs and in the stands. And it was just like, if you could take us back to 1984, 85, 86, you're right. They're all in the dugout watching the ceremony. I'm sure Budo was pumped up. And as for the rain, I think it was Howie Rose and even, you know, and you're backing it up. What couldn't stop Doc of all the trials and tribulations that he had gone through in his life? A little rain's going to stop Doc.
I thought it was so apropos and so perfect. Like right when it first started raining, you're bummed out. You're like, oh man, I can't believe it's going to rain.
Yeah, because you're getting wet from, you know.
But as the day went on, and this is what I said too on Twitter, if you don't believe in the baseball gods,
right,
you're never going to believe in the baseball gods, because that was a perfect representation of kind of the travel through Doc's travels to get to this point. And it just ended with a beautiful sunny day and just phenomenal, man. I'm so blessed and so lucky to say that I was able to do the dinner and then to be at the game and just to know that I was there and for my, you know, my guy, it was my idol growing up.
Yeah.
And to say that I got to spend some time with him on the weekend that he got his number retired is something I'll take with me for the rest of my life.
I'm happy you got to see it in person. I saw Piazza's number, you know, at Citi Field. The tarp was on the field. It didn't rain, but same kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, your favorite player ever, friend of yours that you luckily get to call, you know, that must have been awesome. Plus, it always helps when they win, and it turned out to be a beautiful day.
It was.
I'm happy. You know, and the last thing on Doc before we move on, Doc, you know, he speaks from the heart. He's very articulate. And, you know, he spoke to the fans as if it was just a one-on-one. And as he told us on the podcast, and he told all the fans in the stands, like, I'm a Met. This number coming up for you to the rafters is because of you. And that's why, you know, he mentioned the Yankees in his speech and whatever. And he said, don't worry, you know, I'm always a Met, because they were booing. And I found it funny. But I just give more props to Doc because, you know, he speaks well, speaks from the heart, and he can relate to us New Yorkers, you know. So
I'll tell you good one last thing, and I know we'll button it up here. My wife, after watching all of it and all that, my wife, Michelle, she said, he just seems like such a nice man, and nothing could be further from the truth. He's just a nice man, and I'm so happy for him getting his flowers and getting what he is well-deserved.
I totally agree with her. When he was on the podcast, I had never, maybe I've met him when I was a kid and I forget for a brief second, but you know, for an hour long podcast, he couldn't have been nicer to us. You know, I know you have a lot of interactions with him, but for me personally, he was gracious. He was nice. And, you know, totally agree with your wife. So congratulations to Doc Gooden. I'm glad that you had a great weekend over at Citi Field.
Thank you.
And as we move on, I think it's a perfect segue. Doc pitched in the heydays of when the Mets owned the town and the Mets were, you know, the team to beat in the National League. The New York Mets started the year 0-5, and things looked bleak. And like I said before in the podcast, as we all know, the baseball season is a marathon and not a sprint. We fast forward, the Mets swept the Pittsburgh Pirates, who came in playing really well. They have taken four series before they went on that six-game West Coast trip, three in L.A., three in San Francisco with an off day on Thursday, all against teams over 500, winning 10 of 13. They could not look any more loose, playing free, looking great. I mean, the stats speak for themselves. 10-3, last 13. That is hard to do when you start 0-5.
Yeah.
They look great. And again, it's a marathon. You don't want to get too high. You don't want to get too low. But when you win four in a row, you sweep a team, all against very good teams playing well, you know, things are looking good. And a lot of the players haven't even hit their peak yet. So I wanted to get your thoughts. I have mine on the drastic just 0-5, first time since 05, you know, and nothing looking good. People are giving up already. And now as we talk here, you know, as they are in, you know, on the West Coast, playing the best baseball of anybody in the league. It's amazing. No pun intended.
What a drastic turnaround. I mean, I'm sure there was plenty of people that felt the season was over after the first five games, and rightfully so, to be a little bit bummed out. And I'm sure they were a little bit bummed out. But I tell you what, it says a lot for the guys in the clubhouse and a lot for the coaching staff for them to kind of keep their wits about them and know that baseball is a streaky game at times. And you're going to go through periods where you do lose five games in a row. Obviously, coming out of the gates losing five in a row makes everybody feel like, oh, man, they're going to stink. But you got to tip your cap to the grit, the stick-to-itiveness, like we've talked about before. Everybody, what I love about it is just everybody seems to be pulling for one another, and it doesn't really seem to be like anybody's trying to overshadow anybody else or say they're the star or they're the reason why the team is doing well. Obviously, the pitching staff, obviously we've talked about the starters trying to go a little bit deeper, but the starters and the relievers are pitching probably above what everybody had expected coming in, which can bode well for their confidence. You know, they're going to be building their confidence and start believing that they can do it.
They have the best DRA in the National League. Facts are facts. They do.
Yeah, stats don't lie. They do not lie. You know,
they do not lie. Ball don't lie. Stats don't lie.
Yeah, math adds up no matter how you cut it. So, Mets fans should be extremely excited about this ball club right now. Obviously, going out to face the Dodgers is going to be a test for them. But they've passed the early tests after the first five games, like you said, against all clubs that are above 500, clubs that came in hot. They beat they won a series against the reigning division champs and their nemesis, their rival. All good signs, man.
It was the Reds, the Braves, the Royals, the Pirates, all series wins, sweeping the Pirates. And the one thing that is different about this team now, many teams in Major League Baseball history have won 10 of 13. But the way that the Mets are doing it, they're never out of a game. They show grit. They show fight. They're just never out. I believe 8 out of the 10 wins of this 13-game span, the other team has scored first. And that's not sustainable, but you'll take it. And it just proves my point that they're never out of a game. Plus, in the 8th inning, in this 13-game span, they've scored about 30 runs. That's a lot. And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I do have a pretty good memory. 257 is their average in that when they're trailing in the 8th inning as a team collectively or something like that. The point is clutch hits.
Yeah,
the chemistry in the dugout, in the clubhouse, when you get that, and you're a former big leaguer who has been on winning teams, and even before that, when you were on good teams and, you know, in the minors and everything like that, when you form that feeling as one in the clubhouse, when already, you know, 17, 18 games into the season, that, oh, we're down 3-1 in the eighth? Fuck it. We can win this. That goes a major way for the rest of the season. They have already set that precedent early on. Instead of, oh, crap, we're down 3-1. You know, how big of that is that for a ball player knowing that, you know what, we're never out of the mother effing game?
I think that's huge. That's a great point. I think that there will be times, and I'm sure early on, you know, and it was only five games, but those first five games seemed like 500 games, but where they felt like, oh, man, you know, we're done. We're done.
Yeah.
I really believe that they all think that we're right there, guys. And if you see them, they're all up on the top step of the dugout, hanging over the rail, engaged in the game, engaged in their teammates. And I think that speaks to exactly what you're saying, is they believe that they're there. They're right there. I think that the position players are believing in the pitching staff to hold them into ball games, which they're doing. And then the clutch hits, the little bit of baseball they're playing where they're, you know, hitting behind a runner, the few sacrifice bunts have been dropped
down. A double steal out of nowhere.
Beating out an infield ground ball in a must beat out an infield ground ball moment to win a ball game. I love it that it's not all about just bashing the ball, three-run homers or bashing the ball over the fence. It's like pass the baton on to the next guy and you do your thing. And same thing with the baseball. Give the baseball to the next guy and let him do his thing when he goes out on the hill. And just being a baseball club, just a baseball team and playing a team game.
Right. And to further with your point, the three-run homer, yeah, we're used to that with the Braves and the Yankees and teams like that. But passing a baton is more sustainable than looking for that three-run homer. You know, what was that, the school of Earl Weaver?
Yes.
Where, you know, give me that three-run homer any day of the week. What I like about this team is that you're getting contributions from everyone on the roster, all 26 men, from Zach Short, you know, not really, okay, but Joey Wendell all the way to Pete Alonso. Now, yes, Francisco Lindor is struggling, and we could talk about it very briefly about the righty-lefty thing a little bit later, but you're getting contributions from guys like, and I can't believe I'm saying this, Harrison Bader,
yeah,
who's looked pretty damn good at the plate, and that's not why they signed him. They knew what right. they were getting when they signed him. He's got some huge clutch hits. He's very good out there in the outfield, but he's, you know, he's won the Mets, what, 2-3 games just with his bat. Joey Wendell had a big hit the other night. You know, guys, Brett Beatty clutch. They're getting clutch hits from a lot of different players. And the last thing about this team, I've always said a good bullpen will win you more games than not versus other teams. The Mets have the third best bullpen in the National League. And a lot has to do with that with Edwin Diaz. I've heard players on the Mets quoted in the locker room saying it is such a mind confidence booster when they know, I think it was Jake Diekman who said this, we know that we don't have to worry about the ninth inning, that Diaz has got it. We just worry about doing our jobs. And, you know, like you said last podcast, it's not a 27 out game anymore for yep. the Mets, you know, because you don't have to worry about those last three outs when you got a lockdown closer. Josh Hader, the second best closer, and I have my hands or fingers in quotes, he's been awful for the Houston Astros after 100 million. And Diaz doing his thing, velocity a little bit down, but they're getting contributions from literally everybody. Severino, Brooks Raley's been unbelievable. Joey Wendell's now come about, Harrison Bader, and their big boys haven't even peaked. Lindor, McNeil, Nimmo, OPS's under 700, all of them. Alonso's having a great start, you know, in terms of stats and top home run hitters in the league like he always is, but they haven't even peaked. So how much better could this team get? So, you know, there's a lot to unpack there. I know I just went off, but contributions from everybody.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I'll go to Bader real quick. I think early on when he was struggling and people were beating him up, including us probably.
Oh, yeah.
I think one thing about him is he didn't hear any of that shit. He believed in himself completely, and it's kind of turned around for him. And huge hits to win games. You know, Wendell, obviously, I've always thought that he was a very comparable player to Guillorme, a solid baseball player. Not gonna be the most flashy guy out there, hit the ball all over the park, but he's a baseball player. He's gonna do the things
veteran.
That it takes. Do the things that it takes, you know, hit the ball where hit it where they're not, make every single play. About Diaz and his velocity, part of me wonders if this guy's pitching more than throwing than he had to, like when he first came
yeah.
over. I remember watching him throw, like, I remember the first time I really started paying attention to him was World Baseball Classic, two World Baseball Classics ago. And he was throwing 99 miles an hour, and he was almost hitting people in the neck with, like, every single pitch.
Right.
So he's throwing at 95, but he's reached it up to 98 and 99, and he's mixing two different kinds of sliders in there. Part of me thinks that, and I think we talked about this last week, he's pitching more than he's throwing now, and so what if his velocity's down a little bit? The best closer in the history of the game threw 91 miles an hour, and he threw one freaking pitch. So all the people that want to complain about numbers this, numbers that, and they, you know, analytical numbers, it doesn't matter. The bottom line is outs. And you can't tell Edwin Diaz that he doesn't have the biggest balls on the planet when he's standing out there in the ninth inning. So if he has to kick it up to home plate, if he has to shoot it out of his butt, whatever it may be, he's gonna go out there and that dude's going to compete his ass off with whatever he's got. If it has to be knuckleballs, if it has to be spitballs, whatever it may be. So
yeah.
The contributions for everybody, tremendous. The other guys are going to get it going. They will. They're good ball players. I'd like to see McNeil relax just a little bit. You know, he's that, but that's part of what makes him a good player. Is he has a hard time relaxing. And I couldn't be more happy with the ball club right now. I'm not going to complain about some of the big guys not doing great right now when you're putting up W's, because in the long run, it's not about the personal thing. It's their personal stats. It's about the W and the L column, and that's it.
You know, we talked about the bullpen, and Diaz is such a huge, big factor of why the bullpen is doing so much better, having him back compared to 2023. But Brooks Raley has looked amazing. Diekman's looked good. But we got to talk about Reed Garrett for a second.
Oh, yeah.
Reed Garrett was claimed by Billy Epler last year off waivers from the Orioles and did not pitch well at the end of the year for the Mets. But they kept him around, and now Reed Garrett – has 17 strikeouts, 31 batters faced. That's Edwin Diaz 2022. Like, that's 54%. Wow. Now, he hasn't given up a run. I don't even think the guy's given up a hit. Now, that will change, obviously. But when you got everybody, when I say everybody's contributing on this team, even Lindor, who could not hit water if he fell off a fucking boat batting lefty. He's still contributing because he's adding plus defense. He's a leader in that locker room.
Absolutely.
He's always cheering. You know, you could not tell if he went 0 for 4 or 4 for 4. I give him props for that. Yep. But Reed Garrett, man, I mean, when you got a guy who out of nowhere has, like, He learned this pitch, I think, in the offseason. He went to the Mets pitching lab with Jeremy Hefner, learned his slider, and it's almost like the ghost forkball for Senga, you know. And by the way, Senga hasn't even pitched,
hasn't even pitched yet.
JD Martinez hasn't even swung a bat. He's a Met,
right?
You know, and the Mets have won 10 of 13, but getting Peterson back
hasn't pitched yet,
right?
McGill still has McGill is coming off the mend,
right?
Off the Schneider, the mend a little bit.
How much better is this team going to be if a healthy JD Martinez is in the lineup? That's only going to help a Lindor and a Pete, and maybe, like we talked about last podcast, with the Francisco Alvarez, who is struggling right now, you know, bat him lower in the lineup. But when you got a Reed Garrett who's looking like an Edwin Diaz, and it just furthers my point that everybody's contributing, a good bullpen is going to be sustainable through 162. And I have to tip my cap to David Stearns, because even Jorge Lopez, who, you know, we were shitting on, or maybe I was, about, oh, they're going the bounce back route of guys who've had a good year, you know, 2 years ago or whatever. Jorge Lopez has looked great. Last year, Luis Severino was technically the worst pitcher in the major leagues.
And he's been fantastic.
He has a 2.14 ERA Wednesday. Six innings, finally, yes. A quality start other than Jose Budo. They've had three quality starts. Two from Budo, it was only two starts. And now Luis Severino. I got to tip my cap a little bit to David Stearns, that maybe this is the reason why the Brewers for 10 years were always in it. Because these moves, I'm seeing it. Bader here, Lopez here, Diekman there. But yeah, Reed Garrett, man. He's a savior.
One thing about Garrett is being DFA'd three times and
like, Japan.
Japan struggled. Like, I tell you what, man, and I know that we've used the word, and I've already said it once the pod, but
I know it's
intuitiveness, bro. Like, stick to it. And there's something about the pitch development and the pitch design is what they call it with the pitching labs. So right. If he can go there and he can analyze the spin on the ball and the which changes the break on the ball. And he can find a better pitch. I'm all for that stuff. You know, I think that's great for you to learn how to develop a new movement on a pitch that maybe you threw it a certain way your whole life and it turned into where it wasn't being a successful pitch anymore. And you can get some analytics and get some science behind it to learn how to make it do something different, and it can forward your career. I mean, look, we're obviously all excited right now because they're playing really, really well. But
yep.
We weren't all excited 2 weeks ago, so we need to keep it cool, keep it level.
Yes.
And I think that's exactly what the team's doing, is they kept it cool, they kept it level, and it's voted well for them. Severino, couldn't be more happy for that guy. He's been through a lot health-wise for, it seems like forever now. So you tip your cap to him for, again, stick-to-itiveness. He's getting the rewards of sticking to it and saying, I'm not a quitter, and I can still do this.
even Quintana. You know, Quintana is not giving you length in games, but he doesn't give up runs. So he's giving you five innings, one or two runs, but that's who he is. He's a lifetime 350 ERA pitcher, a veteran, 35, 34 years old. He's not supposed to be the ace of this team. You know, Senga, who hopefully will be coming back, is supposed to be the ace of this team. They're doing it without him. You know, so you're getting what we expected from Quintana. We're getting what we hoped from Severino and even Marte. Remember we said Marte, the glue and a big X factor? Well, Marte's hitting 280, 290. And quietly, very quietly, because, you know, with Marte's the swagger and all that, he's doing it like, I'll hit you 290, steal some bases, have some, you know, exit velocities of 105 to 110. And he's doing it kind of under the radar.
That's the funny thing about him with his swag is I kind of see his swag is under the radar.
You still see it? Okay.
I see it like, he looks good in the uniform. He has his little, he has his deal, but it's like more of like a confidence as opposed to a flashiness where I, and this isn't anything against Lindor because I know they're two different characters, where Lindor will do it with the shoes and the glove and the glasses and the hair. Marte to me is more like just the, I'm the cock of the walk, baby, you know, and just this, the way he strides around when he walks up to home plate and all that. He just carries himself in a confident manner. Regardless of 280 or 210 or whatever. And it's so, I'm so happy that, that we've talked about it all winter. We talked about it early in the year that he is back being the ball player that we know he is. He's had a little bit of struggles in the outfield, you know, catching fly balls, but I think right field, after being at a Citi Field quite a few times here early in the season, I feel like right field is the most difficult position on the field defensively in that stadium.
But if you heard what he said after he dropped that ball and there was a ton of wind, he said, I have to make that catch regardless if there's a tornado going on. So he took full accountability.
He's a pro.
I love it.
Pro. That guy's he's a pro.
Yeah. You know and so I want to move on because we talked about all this with how well they're playing with confidence and how they're never out of a game and how everybody's contributing. How much do you put this on? And now, you know, we're only 18, 19, 20 games into the season. How much do you equate this to their new manager, Carlos Mendoza? Because what I see is energy, positiveness, passion in the dugout, and not to go and rip Buck Showalter or Mickey Callaway or Luis Rojas, but you never saw this from these managers. Mendoza actually shows emotion, pumps his fists, you know, is out there on the field actually acting like a fan where he's giving one of those, you know, pumps to the air, like on that balk that was the other night where they got the winning run. Like, players feed off of this. Buck, listen, four-time manager of the year, 500 career wins and losses, could make the Hall of Fame. He's never won anything in his life other than those awards in terms of championships. But if you remember, and we all remember, they would just pan to his stoic face in the dugout, and he would just, nothing.
Yeah.
And that is not conducive to a younger team. Mendoza is letting these kids play and letting them do what the hell they want, like a Brett Beatty, you know, and praising them. Jose Budo, we talked about it. After he pitched on Doc Day and pitched lights out, his first comments were, Jose Budo is not going anywhere. I would bet $1 million that a million out of a million times Buck Showalter would never have said that. And so I tip my cap to Carlos Mendoza, who publicly is trusting his players because that gives them confidence. I need your take, Bill. I think Mendoza is doing what he needs to do.
Obviously, the message that he's sending is getting through to the team. And we talked about this in previous podcasts about me going to the ballpark and not seeing anybody out on the foul lines in between or before the game getting ready. I've been to the stadium three times this year. There's been people outside playing catch, running, stretching prior to each game, just like baseball's always been played. So I believe that message has been sent. I played with Carlos in Venezuela for two seasons in the winter ball, and winter ball is different. Winter ball has a different vibe than even the major leagues until probably you get till the end of the season, pennant race time, postseason playoff time, where there's so many because they're smaller countries. The rivalries are big. And I think that Mendoza has been around exciting. And then obviously being in New York with the Yankees for many years, I think he's been around exciting brands of baseball, even though it's not at the major league level, for a long time. And I look, we were talking about this the other day through text, the types of guys that are managers that spend the time to go be managers down in winter ball are your hard-nosed, gritty, root for your players, do things the right way types of guys. And Carlos was a guy that never made it to the big leagues. He had to battle his ass off to get whatever he got as a player on the field. But he was the guy that was playing winter ball every single year. And when you have LaGuira versus Magallanes or LaGuira versus Caracas, because he was a LaGuira player, and these are big-time teams down there. And I know people will say, oh, it's not the big leagues. You're crazy. Until you've been there, until you've seen it, you have no idea. So I think that his exuberance and his rooting for his players, and if you've ever watched some of the highlights on YouTube of some of the Venezuelan League games where there'll be a fight in there'll be a fight on the field or something, it's right. Absolutely insane. and insane in a good way, I say that. Obviously, fighting and violence is never great. But it's just a whole different vibe, and I think he's carrying that in. And I think he is a little bit younger, obviously, than Buck. Not a little. No, I don't think. We know.
Oh, he's very much younger.
But, you know, I think where Rojas, he kind of came through with the Mets organization as the quiet, calm, cool, collected guy. Yep. And I think that Mendoza is a different type of guy. And I think that a lot of it stems from his roots in Venezuela and the Venezuelan Winter League and all the years that he spent down there. And then he's obviously learned his buttoned up major league approach by being a major league coach for so many years that, we all wanted to bash him a little bit early on. Obviously it's easy to do when the team's struggling, but you got to give credit. You got to give credit where credit is due. And he obviously held this team together as well as I'm sure the players did in the clubhouse. And has got them in the position now that they're playing winning baseball, and it's exciting.
You know, this podcast, I will say, we are fair. If the team is not doing well, we'll call them out, but we'll also give credit where credit's due. Now, I bashed Mendoza when, you know, you're throwing on a double steal first and third. That comes from the manager, whether you're throwing a second base. And Omar Narvaez threw it to second, cost the Mets a run. But that's when they were not playing well. Now the Mets are playing well, and we're giving props to a Carlos Mendoza.
How about him letting Bader hit righty, you know, righty-righty inning when he hits the, you know, he dribbles the ball down the third base and runs his ass off?
Right.
If you think that, oh, a new age manager didn't play in the big leagues, he would have been analytics. Okay, I got to get the lefty out there. But he was probably thinking later down the line as well, I'm going to go with my gut. The guy who's had a heck of a ball game leading up to that at bat.
Right.
We're in a close ball game. Maybe I don't want to lose my defense and not use DJ Stewart off the bench there to take the righty on lefty at bat. And it paid off. So I love to see that. And again, I will go back to winter ball with that, where in winter ball, you're not going by all these crazy, crazy numbers. You know, you're going
analytics. It's play.
Right, you're going by
have gut fun. Instinct. Do your thing.
What am I seeing in front of me right now? So you tip your cap to him for, and it paid off, which in turn has made Bader even more confident in himself.
Yeah.
So you tip your cap to the manager for sticking with this player there, and it's paying off, where the guys use that as a springboard into even bigger and better things.
And the last thing on Mendoza before we get to the mailbag, because we do have a lot of questions today. You know, I like Mendoza in his press conference. We didn't know much about him other than he, you know, 20 years in the Yankees organization. The last four is Aaron Boone's bench coach with the Yankees, ran spring training all those years. So we know his baseball acumen. But what we didn't know, obviously he's bilingual. He's from Venezuela. And you know, speaks bilingual, but so did Luis Rojas. But he was sharp. And what Stern said about him, and I said, you know, you got to show me. And now I see it. He kind of takes over a room. And when he's giving his press conferences before, after, answering questions, you could tell his sharpness.
He is articulate. Yep.
His tone, knows how to speak well, knows, you know, there's a how you frame your words, you know, audio wise and from the diaphragm and everything like that. That's an art. And
no, he knows, he speaks very well.
He knows what he's doing. And I like,
he knows the game. I mean, I hear him talking about, you know, talking pitching, talking about using the two seamer, like using terminologies that you would expect the pitching coach to use. And not a middle infielder that, you know, didn't play in the big leagues. Like he knows what he's talking about.
Right. So you factor all those things together. What you just said about you got to know the game, of course, as a manager in the big leagues. You got to know how to speak to the press in New York for sure. But one thing that I really liked, and I get it, he was with the Yankees for 20 years. You know, after I forget what day it was, he gave his due to John Sterling, who retired the spot. Well.
Yes.
And he just, and I get it. He traveled with John Sterling for decades, you know, on the plane and, you know, probably knew each other. And he said, John Sterling always, you know, was good to me and I wish him the best and all that. You know, that takes, I respect that. It seems like he's a good guy as well. And when you're a manager of a team, and not just a baseball team, a company, a retail store, just a supervisor of a person, when you're a good person and you know your shit, that goes a long way to the people who are that you're supervising. So, yes, 18, 19, 20 games in, it's not a big sample size, but already starting 0-5 to being two games, three games over, I've liked what I've seen from Carlos Mendoza, especially his energy. And I don't think it's a big coincidence that they have this grit. They have this confidence of we're never out, because I think Carlos Mendoza has something to do with that.
I agree. He's done a great job. They've done a great job. And it could have fallen apart. He showed that he kept them together, you know.
Yeah.
So that there's something to be said for that.
And before we move to the mailbag, I'm not gonna sit here and say, you know, next week for the podcast, and that's gonna lose seven in a row, we could shit all over everybody. You know? that's baseball. You're gonna win five, you're gonna lose two, you're gonna win three. It's 162 games. So like you said, and they know these players know it. Can't get too low, can't get too high, and neither can we, as we are a podcast that exactly. So, good times in Metland. Six games on the road trip: three in LA, three in San Francisco. Never easy to win out there. I always say, if you can split your six games, if that's what it is, that's a 500 road trip, 3,000 miles away.
Absolutely,
I will sign for that right now.
I agree.
So we'll see what happens. But it's been an entertaining start to the season, to say the least.
It's been not the kiddie coaster so far. It's been the Rebel Yell, which was a roller coaster in Kings Dominion where I grew up, which was like one of the craziest roller coasters. It's been a Rebel Yell so far, but very enjoyable. Obviously, we're on the high end right now, but we're happy.
Not to be the We're happy in Mets land, and again, they're going to lose. And what did I say? You remember this well. You're going to win 60, you're going to lose 60. It's what you do with the other 40 that makes your season. So keep it around 500, get me to 540 games to go, and there's your season. So that's what they're doing. And no Senga yet, and no JD Martinez yet. That only can help. So
absolutely.
Let's move to the mailbag. We got some questions to ask.
All right.
If you're new to the show by listening or watching, again, please subscribe by hitting that subscribe button at Shea Hello Media on YouTube. Follow us wherever you get your podcasts. Shea Hello Podcast is our name. New to the show, we always tweet out at Shea _ hello questions that we will read from listeners live on the air to Bill or myself. Mostly go to Bill. He's got the resume and the tenure.
You're getting up there. You're getting up there now. You've guilted enough people into making sure.
You want to say guilt? I'm not manipulating.
I know. I'm
here.
Busting your chops.
You're the one with the pension, man. I'm the one.
Not yet.
On the show.
Hold off. But yeah, thank you.
All right. So if you got a question for next podcast, look out. Follow Shea _ hello on Twitter, and you can ask any question you want. We'll do our best to read every question. So let's start with your boy Bill. All right, he's back. NYMGI
for
Bill. Yeah. He's all good.
About him.
I know. For Bill and Casey, are there any free agents besides Pete that you think the Mets should start talking extension with? I try to see if Brooks Raley is interested. I'll let you take the first.
I love the guy. I think he's great. I mean, obviously, we know that pitching contracts have kind of taken a change a little bit other than Yamamoto, but it might be early to say talking to a left-handed relief pitcher at this point in time. But absolutely, man. Why would you want that guy? He's proven that he can pitch in New York. I know he's not the most blazing fastball guy out there, but that's not the thing to me. I'm pitching and outs is what matters. So I like him a lot.
Yeah, I don't care how hard you throw. I mean, look at Aaron Loop in 2021. He statistically had the best, you know, bullpen lefty ever. You know, I put him up there with Dennis Cook all those years in the late 90s. You know, Brooks Raley doesn't have that light wipeout stuff, but he gets the job done. So, absolutely.
Absolutely.
I would love to have – he's a free agent, obviously, at the end of the year. There won't be talk about extensions during the year for these guys.
I don't see why they're not going to sign him. Unless he gets a knockout offer somewhere else. You know, I can't see them not trying to sign him.
They picked up his option for this year, so obviously he's back. He's pitching great. I would love to have him back. But they're not going to obviously talk about it during the year. But, yes, Brooks Raley if he's interested, I would love to have him back. And I'll put one more to answer the question. And thank you for including me, Mr. NYMGI. Jose Quintana is a free agent. Now, 2025, the Mets are going to have all this money coming off the books. I would like to see Jose Quintana maybe come back. He's a free agent. He's a veteran. He's a pro's pro. He's got that ERA every year. It's 350. You know what you're going to get. He's professional. He's a lefty. And you could slot him as a number three or four. He's not the ace. So that is another name that I want to throw in there that I would
good one.
I'd like to have Jose Quintana maybe come back.
Maybe a 1 year with the option, vested option and stuff like that. I think that's great.
I believe he's 34 right now. So coming back as a 35-year-old, sure. You know?
Yeah, throw an innings level in there or something, you know, for an option. And sure, he competes. You know what you're going to get. Yep. Obviously, you get to the point to where you're old, but absolutely, that's a good call.
We'll move on. Thanks for the question, NYGMI. Jeff Cohen, big fan of the show. He's got a podcast, Baseball Barbecue. Go subscribe over there. Big fan of his show as well. He's got a question for you and me. So we'll start with your question. Bill, in your years in the majors, you played for six or seven managers. Can you give us some of the similarities and differences between them? Was Phil Gardner more like a Bobby V or Dallas Green, etc.?
I would say that similar in their ways would probably be more Dallas and Phil Garner than Bobby V. Bobby V was a special individual. He was different than anybody I ever played for, good and bad. You know, he was, like I've said before on the pod, a brilliant baseball mind. A little could rub some people the wrong way. I think everybody's a little bit different. I think obviously knowing the knowledge of the game, I throw Bobby way up there high, but I think that Phil and Dallas were more old school by the gut.
Nothing wrong with that either.
Gruff of the neck guys, you know.
Yeah.
Tony La Russa, obviously another baseball brilliant mind, maybe a little rough with players at times, you know, wanting things done specifically his way and his way only, but I think everybody's a little bit different, but if I was going to compare, I can't compare anybody to Bobby Valentine. I would compare, I mean, maybe La Russa, but different characters, different characters for sure. But I think everybody's a little bit different, you know?
Yeah,
but
totally.
I can see most old school, just go out and fucking do it and get it done would be, you know, Phil Garner and Dallas Green.
Right.
I could see them as comps. Obviously, totally different men. Dallas was a freaking giant.
Yes.
And not that Garner was a tiny man, but Garner just wasn't, you know, 6'6" and big.
Beautiful. Hovering over you.
Yeah, big, beautiful white hair and booming voice, you know. So,
yep.
But good question.
Yep. He's got one for me. Casey, you're going on a baseball road trip. What stadium is a must-see for you? I live in Florida, so I'm going to Citi Field. I haven't been there this season, so we're going to Citi Field. So I know that's a cliche answer. I've been to Citi Field over 100, 200 times in my life. But since I live in Florida right now, Citi Field.
I tell you what, I went three times already. The first time I've been back-to-back with the Mets since I was a player with the Mets. It's a great ballpark. And the concourse itself, walking around the concourse and the amount of food and the amount of people walking away around and just the vibe of the people at Citi Field is just, it's great. It really is great. Everybody gets along with each other. There's no like worry of people possibly fighting or anything like that. Cause you see some of these NFL games and that, and people are fighting in the stands.
Or Dodger Stadium. Dodger Stadium is turning into the hood, you know,
it's
like
crazy.
Too many fights.
I feel like it's just a family
oriented
ballpark where everybody walks around cordially with everyone and everybody just is enjoying it. And I think it's great. I really enjoy going.
And Citi Field was rated number one for food in terms of ballpark and concessions.
Let me tell you, I've been three times and I've had I've had a lot of good food.
Yeah. They have you had that? What was it? The egg roll with the rainbow cookie or something?
I did run into a fantasy camp family, and the kid had the son was standing there holding it, and it looked fantastic. But I was more into the lobster roll and the pastrami sandwich that I had the last two times I went.
I've heard, the
sandwich is off the charts.
The pastrami sandwich I've heard very good things about.
For ballpark food, it's not ballpark food, man. That is a top-notch pastrami sandwich.
Yeah. Good questions. Thank you, Jeff Cohen. Let's move on. Theo A., he's got a question for Bill. And he's actually got two questions, so we can both chime in here. When Senga comes back, who goes down? And for Bill, which best pitch you saw in your time in MLB? So we'll
go. Who goes down? I have no idea. Whoever's struggling the most at the time. Yeah, that's
it depends when Senga comes back. We don't know. And it depends who's on the. Right. It could be anybody.
Let's get him back first. But it could be, whoever's struggling at the time. That's who's going to go down.
I could tell you that Senga he's finally through a bullpen.
Well, that's good.
So, and everything came back okay, but he's got to get on a mound. He's got to go back to back, side sessions. He's got to face live pitching. He's got to have rehab starts. He was put on the 60-day IL. He can't come back until May 28 anyway.
Right.
So we ain't seeing him until June.
Ask that question again in a few podcasts, and we can have a better answer.
He has as far as best pitch.
Best pitch or best pitcher?
He goes, best pitch you ever saw in your time in MLB. So I'm guessing
from outside of the batter's box, from watching it from the dugout, it would be, I'm going to say three things. Randy Johnson fastball, Randy Johnson Mr. Snappy slider. I'm going to say four things, actually. Billy Wagner fastball, Billy Wagner breaking ball.
Okay. I was expecting a Pedro change.
Well, now I'm going to go to in the batter's box.
Right.
In the batter's box, Pedro Martinez. Now, I caught him as an expo. This was before he was at his prime.
He was still
He was only throwing 95, 96. He wasn't throwing 98, 99 like he did when he was in Boston. Pedro in the batter's box was explosive. And Kevin Brown in the batter's box, where I stood in the batter's box against them, he was scary, scary good.
Kevin Brown had that sinker that he threw hard, right?
Yeah, and he had a split finger that he threw to me that struck me out looking, that came out of his hand. It seemed what it was about neck high, or shoulder high, and dropped down to about my knees as it got to home plate for strike three. And I was like, what in the hell was that? And I went into the video room and said, what was the velocity on that pitch? And it was 92 miles an hour. And this was in a 1999 game. So obviously the guns are a little bit different because they read the ball from a different point. So for him to throw a split finger that was what seemed to me shoulder height to knee height in one pitch at 92 miles an hour, that was one of the nastiest pitches I've ever seen.
I mean, you faced Kevin Brown in the box, so I have nothing to say in terms of what you saw. But I can only imagine it as somebody throwing a bowling ball 95 miles an hour. Good luck. That sucks.
hit it, and your back goes backwards.
Right. You hit it, and you're going to break your back.
Right.
So, good question, Theo A. Let's get to one more question. It's from J12889. He's got a question for you, Bill. If you had a choice I believe he's maybe one or two questions, but I'm not going to hold my breath. But anyway, thank you, Jake, for the question. J12889, question for Bill. Bill, if you had a choice between having the deadliest teeter with movement or the best curveball ever known to man, which pitch would you choose?
Well, I think he might have won it with the deadliest heater with movement.
Let's take the
move. If you would have just said deadliest heater and it was straight, I might have said best curveball known to man. But there was a guy that we talked about at the beginning of the the podcast today that kind of had a little bit of both of those. Although, you know, Doc didn't really, although as he got older, he started to sink the ball a little bit, but can I have both?
Yeah. Well, no, like you got to pick one. Yeah.
I mean, look, man, the flashy wise, obviously blowing people away with a fastball is more flashy than with the curveball, but making somebody, when they showed the highlight Doc. Video,
the 12-6.
I'm standing up in the stands watching it, laughing out loud at some of the swings that you saw. And it's so funny. I had a buddy describe it to me the other day, and I'd never heard it before. And this is because my son, who's working out with the Ducks, the Long Island Ducks, getting a chance to possibly play with them. He texts me saying,
good luck to Liam, by the way.
Thank you. He's doing great so far, too. So knock on wood, he's doing great. He threw again.
Rooting for Liam.
Thank you. He sent me a text. He said he threw a curveball and it looked like they were swinging at dust. And it took me a second to think about it. And I thought about it like, okay, dust's kind of all over in the air and you're kind of swinging at it. And so obviously making somebody look silly on a curveball like that is pretty cool too.
Yeah, those curveballs by Doc. But
I'll choose blowing somebody's tits away with the fastball.
I would do that too. Nothing like that. What comes to mind is like a Jacob DeGrom where he could just nod his head. You know, okay.
And just blow them away. Yeah, that's
and
a
just
point.
Blow them away. You know, hey, by just, the way, I got
throw,
you.
Yeah, I'm going to throw a fastball down and away, just so you know that. And then
the old number one, you know, like Major League. Jake Taylor's like, oh, all these pitches to choose from, you know.
Right. Which,
and then Ricky Vaughn just bam.
Well, that's the thing. You know, that's funny you say that because my favorite pitcher of all time, obviously, was Doc Gooden. But my favorite now, you know, pitcher of today is a guy that doesn't even have a curveball, really. And it's the Jake, obviously get well, Jake, because baseball is better when Jake's healthy. But that's a good point. So blowing the tits away with the fastball is always a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's going to do it for the mailbag. I want to thank everybody for participating, throwing your questions into the hat. Great questions as always. Look out for it every week. Follow us at Shea_hello, and we'll read your questions live on the air like we just did. It is now time before we wrap up episode 32, quick pitches. Now, if you're new to the show, three questions. If I don't like answer to number three to Bill, we go four. Bill does not know what's coming. These questions do not have to be baseball related. Bill has no clue what in the world I'm going to ask him. And Bill, as we always do, I ask you this. Are you ready?
Born ready.
Number one, would you rather stay in at your age now, not when you're 20, stay in on a Friday night or go out?
I'll stay in. Okay. I mean, I go out once in a while, but I'm going to tell you where I go out. I either go out for a dinner or I have a buddy that lives just a couple of miles away that has a little bar in his backyard. And
that's nice.
That's my go out. I'm staying. Not at 20. That's a different answer. But
right. I had to differentiate. Yeah.
Yeah. Stay in.
Okay. Number two. Would you take it if you had the opportunity to be immortal?
To be immortal?
If someone, the power that be, says, well, you know, Bill Pulsifer, you can be immortal. Do you say yes? It's a deep question if you think about it.
It would depend on my situation. I mean, if my situation was completely horrible, no, I wouldn't want
to
be
immortal. You got to factor that into
the
question.
Right now, at this moment right now, I don't need to be immortal. I don't need to be immortal.
Yeah, this moment right now.
I don't need to be immortal.
50-year-old Bill Pulsifer, you know, immortal's not, it's hard out there, you know?
The world is hard. The world's difficult. You know, everything hasn't been roses and butterflies and peaches and cream.
Such is life.
This is it.
Okay. Number three. Now, this will dictate whether I ask question number four.
All right.
I think it's a layup question. Actually, it's not because I don't know the answer. It's just your opinion. Three, what is the best hangover cure?
I would say McDonald's.
For a friend.
McDonald's, yeah. McDonald's, Coke, and lots of it.
Just the drink.
Just McDonald's.
No food, no Big Mac, no fries.
Well, I tell you what, if I'm getting up in the morning and not sleeping in the afternoon, and I would make it to breakfast at McDonald's, I would definitely say that if you throw an Egg McMuffin in there with a large Coke that you drink and then probably refill as well to take it out as you're done. I think that I've always used the McDonald's Coke and the, maybe a little bit of grease to soap it up a little bit. I know soak it up. I know some people will say start have another drink, but
Nah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. I like that
you're
answer.
You already had enough the night before.
Yeah, they call that the hair of the dog.
Hair of the dog. I can't say I haven't done it.
Now, you know, I'm from Long Island, where I'll answer this question, even though I asked it. Kind of like what you're saying, I wouldn't, you know, a Coke from McDonald's, sure, I totally agree. But a bacon, egg, and cheese sandwich
from your
local deli, same kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Can't go wrong with that as a hangover cure.
Absolutely.
So I think that we'll save question number four for next time.
Sounds
it was
good.
A good answer.
Thank you.
That's going to wrap up episode 32. We talked about a lot, the ups and downs of the season. It's a roller coaster, man. 0-5 now to playing the best baseball. West Coast trip underway. It's going to be a fun season. I could just feel it from the energy from the players, you know? I really can.
I agree. I think it's going to be there's no quitting these guys. They proved it already.
Yeah.
It would have been real easy to just say, you know what? What everybody was saying about the season is what the season's going to be, or we'll look forward to trying to get better next year. They've proven that they are going to fight and fight and fight for each other and fight for the organization and fight for their fans. And couldn't be more happy to see that. And, you know, we'll see what happens, because there's a lot of good teams out there.
Yes, there are.
Anything can happen. But it's good to know that they're going to be competitive. Even at, you know, first week, we're like, oh, they're not going to be any good. No, this team is going to be competitive.
And they are.
They've got more to come. There's more to come. Yes.
Senga on the way, JD Martinez on the way, David Peterson on the way. They're going to be competitive, because we can see the type of team that they are. So buckle up, everybody. It's going to be a fun season. Any last words for the listeners before we say goodbye for episode 32?
Just like always, thanks for everybody that watches. Thanks to all the new subscribers. Thanks for all the real, true Mets fans that stick with the team regardless of the situation, win, lose, or draw. And let's fucking go Mets, right?
Absolutely. please subscribe on YouTube at Shea Hello Media. Follow us wherever you get podcasts. Like, share, subscribe, tell your friends, tell your family. And I just want to say thank you to Bill. And of course, thank you to Stephen White, our producer behind the scenes. Check out his podcast, Cold Popcast. It's another great podcast, along with Baseball and Barbecue. Roots-recordings.com. Thank you for sponsoring this episode as well. That's going to wrap up episode 32. Be safe out there, everybody. For Stephen White, Mr. Bill Pulsifer, my name is Casey Lynn, saying so long until next time.